Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 17th day of September, Anno Domini 2022, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news, but first,
we should mention no cameras.
Well.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot to start. Doggone it.
But the thing is, there might be cameras.
I'm starting.
Coming soon.
I'm starting StreamYard.
We have Schrodinger's camera. It both exists and doesn't exist.
Right.
Until you investigate.
I am starting. I'm starting that now. I'll start that in a minute.
Yep.
I should read the news while we're here.
I'll get mine queued up while you're reading.
Fine. So the regular updates to your PC might seem annoyingly regular.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable.
But they're critical to keep your PC safe online. Case in point, Microsoft has released a patch for a zero-day vulnerability affecting all Windows computers. No, seriously. All of them.
Which ones?
All of them.
That sounds like a lot.
The newest security update by Microsoft affects every recent version of Windows. It's currently rolling out to Windows 11, Windows 10, Windows 8.1.
Okay, check.
Windows 8.
As well
as Windows Server versions going all the way back to Server 2008. It's also rolling out for Windows 7. Even though security updates for those were supposed to end on January 14th of 2020.
Oops.
The vulnerability in question is a bug that allows for elevation of privilege in the Windows Common Log File System driver, which an attacker can exploit to obtain system-level privileges on a vulnerable device. The attacker would need access to a compromised machine and the ability to run code on it, so this vulnerability could be exploited through something like a virus or some other malicious file. Microsoft gave credit to four different teams of researchers for reporting the issue, probably signaling that this vulnerability is already being exploited in the wild, something that could also explain the urgency toward fixing the issue even on deprecated, unsupported operating system like Windows 7. The security, and of course, Windows 7 is still being used in a lot of ATMs.
Yep.
And the military pays a bucket load of cash every year to maintain Windows 7, and I believe still Windows 95 machines. The security patch is rolling out to PCs now, so make sure to update your PC as soon as you get a chance. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows bug so bad?
How bad is it?
Bad there was a dog stuck to a fire hydrant. Windows bug so bad, even 7 gets patched. Your choices are, I'll patch immediately, I'll look into it, going commando, baby. I'm not surprised, honestly. At last, my Windows 7 gets another update. Windows. And, of course, other. And, of course, I suspect so far we've only got 24 votes, so please vote in the poll. That's at soundbites.org. Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And if you'd like to talk about the about this poll, you can scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 17-SEPT-22 Windows bugs so bad, even 7 gets patched. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Interesting.
Well, like I said, you know, a lot of the military still uses Windows 7. A lot of ATMs and
embedded
gas companies and, you know, all of that.
A lot
still
of point of
Windows
sale
7.
Things.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they don't need a lot of power, and that was the problem of from Windows 8 on up. They kept raising the level of power that you'd in space that you needed to run an operating system. But still going back to Windows 7 was the most solid operating system that they had because they didn't have to do SP1, SP2, SP3 like the other systems, which they've right. had to do.
Right.
So it's small and it runs. So if you got a a turnkey system built around Windows, running on Windows 7.
Not a huge reason to change it, yeah.
Yeah, they're not going to, all of a sudden go out and buy all these expensive computers and not use half the power.
Well, and the other thing I've noticed is one of the places I live is on Reddit, and there's a category there of people who take pictures of blue screens, especially when they're out in public, like on billboards or on signage, where they go into a baseball stadium and suddenly the menu for the snack bar is
blue screen
instead of showing you the price of curly fries. So it's amazing how much Windows lives just behind so mm-hmm. much of what we see every day.
Oh yeah.
But to see the blue screens pop up at airport terminals, at the arrivals and departures signs, or it's really surprising how much of life these days is not really ink printed on vinyl and shown in front of you. Say when you go through the drive-through, it's not a menu put on a piece of plywood. No, it's a weather-resistant display, an LCD panel.
Well, it's just like the advertisements along the roadside.
Yeah,
they don't go over there now and put. They used to had to put them up with paper and paste.
Sure, right,
back in the old days, sections, and then they went to a vinyl where they just put a vinyl cover over it.
Yep.
Well, now they've just gone to LCD screens,
right,
and a projector on it, and now they found, oh wait a minute, we can rotate through many advertisers and double our revenue. Instead of just having one person on that board for a month, you can now cycle through a bunch of advertisers and raise more money.
And they're a lot more visible at night.
Yeah.
True.
Fantastic.
Yeah. But yeah, so there's a lot. And also on Reddit, there's one for Linux machines. There's one for...
Okay.
And one for Raspberry Pis.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. But yeah, look... Every operating system has issues. There are updates for everything. There's updates for Macs and iPads and Linux machines and Windows machines and Android boxes and Chromebooks.
It's just part of life.
That's part of life. With Windows, however, that's where the vast majority of the exploits happen because that's what the vast majority of the machines are running. So if you have a Windows machine... I know that people like to wait, not be first, pioneers, the arrows, blah, blah, blah. But the fact is that when you have something this egregious that they go all the way back to Windows 7 to patch it.
Yeah, that's serious.
You really should do the update. I think that's a very good idea. Did you get your...
I'm working on it now. I'm getting my StreamYard all set up.
StreamYard is up and running, so we're on something or other. So that's me. That's how that works. Okay. Apparently, I don't know how technology works.
You're going to have to start coming to rehearsal.
Why start now?
Yeah. All right. We should probably, at this point, go to the phones. Our first caller is Dan. And are you actually calling from Sackett's Harbor?
I am.
How are things up there?
Blue skies, the lake is calm, it's about 66 degrees.
Perfect weather.
Nice, very, very nice. So what's up, Dan?
Well, I have a Mac question.
Okay.
I copied some files, a whole bunch of files, from one drive to another drive, to my book, and the copy seems to... Oh, good. I can open the files on my book. It was about a 2 terabyte copy. And now I want a copy from that iBook to a second iBook, and I get an error. I can't transfer any of the files.
Okay.
I get an error 64 or something, and I don't understand why.
Well, let me see what I can find here. Mac copy error 64.
So you're actually trying to copy from one MyBook to another MyBook, yes?
That's correct.
Okay. See, can you save files from your computer to that second MyBook?
We're talking about a Western Digital external drive called a MyBook. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Just to make sure I got that.
Well, I was wondering, though, he copied those files from wherever they were to a MyBook. Why can't he do the same wherever they, you know?
Well, that's what I was getting toward. If he can copy anything to the second MyBook, right?
I can. I think the second MyBook is viable. And I also got the same error when I tried to copy a file from the first MyBook back onto the original Macintosh computer, and I got the error.
One of the things to think about when it comes to external drives, and you may have already done this, but I'll mention it just for the value it might have for the listeners.
Tickles and grins.
When people buy external hard drives at the store or online and you finally get it, it arrives with a certain format on it. And Western Digital doesn't really know for sure what kind of computer it's going to be connected to. But they play the odds and they say, you know what, this is very likely to be a Windows computer that it's going to connect to. So I'm going to format this with a Windows-specific format called NTFS. And that format is perfectly fine for Windows computers. And Mac computers can definitely read from NTFS formatted volumes. But the challenge comes when they try to write to an NTFS formatted volume. macOS by itself cannot natively write to an NTFS formatted volume. You would have to format that destination using the disk utility application in macOS and format it as either APFS, which is Apple's file system, or if you need to be compatible with much, much older Macs, a format called HFS Plus or HFS Extended. I wonder if you had checked on the formatting of either of these MyBooks before you started the copying process?
No, I didn't do that.
Okay. That's the most common, in my experience, that tends to be the most common thing that'll trip people up. The fact that you said you were able to get files written to the first one tells me that must be working okay. It's also possible that it could be formatted XFAT, which is an even older style of formatting. But that has limitations in the length of file names and I think the file size per file, Nick?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
But also, I'm wondering if there isn't a problem with the MyBook itself.
Possibly.
How old is that MyBook?
That I don't know. I'm guessing a couple of years.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, because here's the thing. The error 64 on a Mac, it's either drive not installed, which is clearly not the issue here, but also I/O system errors. So it is very possible that MyBook is not healthy to begin with.
A logic chip.
Yeah. Well, or a cable.
It could be a cable.
Yeah.
Whatever the reason, the point is you could write to it, but you're having trouble reading from it. If you can't copy anything from it anywhere, then I'd have to say the issue is with that drive and not with
the data itself.
Yeah. Well, by now, the data may be corrupted. But
well, the good news is that built into the Mac, there's an app called Disk Utility, and in addition to formatting drives, it can also run what's called a first aid scan. So you can use Disk Utility. You can find it in the Applications folder, and then in there, there's a Utilities folder, and then inside the Utilities folder is diskutility.app. You can double-click on that. It comes in two window panes. On the left, you can pick which volume you want to work with, and then across the top there's a button that says First Aid. You can click that to scan the drive. A scan will take anywhere from 15 seconds to a couple of minutes, and it will let you know if everything appears to be okay or if there are specific issues. That would be the first place to go, just to get a baseline understanding of where you stand.
Question for you, because I don't know Macs. All right, so he's got the one MacBook.
Yeah.
Right? And then he's got these two drives. They're portable drives.
It seems that way.
Now, do they each have their own cable?
Yes.
Then if it is a cable issue, can you switch the cables, use the one that did the transfer correctly to the first drive, move that cable over to the second one that's failing on you just mm-hmm. to eliminate the possibility that it might be a bad cable?
Right, and then that would let him bring back one file off that MyBook.
Yeah.
And see if that works. Looks like you've got some troubleshooting to do, Dan.
Yeah, a little bit of homework.
Especially since it's an Error 64 that is not mounting the hard drive, or it's an I.O. Like you said, it could be the cable. There could be, you know, a crimp in it or whatever, loose connection. So just switching the cables helps, because he knows that one cable did do the job for him once.
Right. Right.
To move it over to the next drive and see if he can still do it, then that eliminates at least that he knows it's not a bad cable. It could be a bad drive going.
Right.
The mechanisms, because back in the day, not that long ago, you used to be able to get these enclosures for, you know, the hard drives out of laptops, and you could pop it in this little box, and people go along and unplug it and plug it in, and that, and all of a sudden they die.
Right.
And what it wasn't the drive, it was the logic board
right.
in the little enclosure.
Yeah, the interface.
That failed and gave out the I.O. error.
Right.
So, Nick said, you got some detective work to do there, sir.
Apparently. Okay, but also, we'll call the first MyBook drive A.
Okay.
Give it a name. So, I was able to successfully copy everything from a suspect drive to drive A, and everything copied. And then also, I was trying to copy a file from drive A back onto the Macintosh, and I got the same error.
Right. So it is possible that the I/O works out but not, or in but not out from the drive's okay. point of view. Right. You can copy stuff in, but you can't get it back out again.
Right.
When an I/O board fails, there are 50 ways it can fail, and that's mm-hmm. one of them.
Yeah.
I could open a file in the drive A and read it and see everything. So it was able to at least open the file, but mm-hmm. I'm just not able to copy it. But I will try the drive first aid utility, see if that clears it up.
Yeah, be careful that you don't, unless you've got another copy of those data somewhere, be careful that you don't erase the drive.
Yeah, erase is a totally separate button in that interface. But yeah, the first aid one is the one you want.
Right. And I do have the original drive, so I could probably copy it from the original onto my book B. But I have never experienced this problem where once I did copy it, it wouldn't let me copy it anywhere else.
Right. Well, the first thing to do is to copy it over to B, just so you have a second copy somewhere.
Back.
Right.
Do that first and then play around with A to get it to work correctly.
Right. And just a little side comment on the patch for Windows.
Yeah.
You were talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is national security secret, but the U.S. military is still using XP on some of their
yep.
equipment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yep. We know that, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's embedded in a lot of their devices. And, you know, if you know anything about the U.S. military, you know it ain't that easy to change things.
It's just like the old day. Well, the thing is if they had the old pen plotters and all that other stuff, and they needed the older machines, because some of the old HP pen plotters and everything else needed serial ports. And you don't find serial ports any longer on newer machines,
right.
And they didn't support the faster software, because pen plotters are very slow.
Yep.
And so it worked, and they were happy to go with it, so why change?
All right, Dan. Thanks. Good luck.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Yep. Bye-bye. Yeah, there's when you get to these kind of odd issues with external devices in particular, it's sometimes very hard to diagnose them. That's, you know, we luckily Dan has a lot of hardware there. He's got another MyBook and additional cables and all of that stuff. One of the problems that you often run into is not that you can't fix a problem, you don't have the right tools to even diagnose it, much less fix it. That's, you know, I can do a lot of stuff, used to be able to, now nobody can do anything in a car, but I used to be able to do a lot of stuff in my car, but I didn't have the tools.
Sure.
So you take it to a garage.
Mm-hmm.
I can do a lot of stuff in my computer, but I often don't have the tools. You know, I don't have an extra hard drive or an extra processor or, you know, whatever.
Right.
To do some diagnostic work, whereas you bring it to a shop and they often have that stuff.
Oh, yeah. I've seen YouTube videos now where they're troubleshooting devices on the board that are no bigger than your fingertip on the big side. And they're looking at it with infrared cameras to see which devices are heating up.
Right.
They're looking for connections that are not flowing as well as they ought to. And they're using those cameras, and then they're coming in with a microscope, and they go in with very precise tools to desolder that part, to apply solder to the solder pads, and to find a replacement, and to put it back in, solder it back in, and test it again. And they're trying to do that at ridiculously small scale.
Yep.
And the average person at their kitchen counter is not able to do that type of thing.
Well, they've got, yeah, because a lot of the little components now don't even use what they call, you know, regular solder that you'd see on a reel. It's called liquid solder. And you could sit there and to put chips on a board that you've got to use tweezers and a high-powered microscope to make sure it gets onto the pads that once you get
it doesn't slop over onto another pad.
Yep, yep. Oh, yeah. It's you're using pins, literally,
yeah,
to put it on that. I watched a couple videos on that, and it's like, yeah, these hands don't have the study.
Well, that's just it. And we're fine. You know, that's a lot of these things now are being made by computers, by robots.
Yeah.
And it's for this very reason. They can do precise, tiny, fiddly little work fast.
Zero.
And that's what lets you make the board smaller and, you know, more compact often means faster.
Yeah, more power efficient.
More power efficient. But it also means when it comes to fixing them, you just throw out the board and replace it.
Yep. Right.
I mean, that. Take a look at your phone. You know, it used to be everything had sockets, and if a chip died, you pulled out the chip, you threw in another chip, you were done.
Nowadays, it's all surface mounted and multi-layer.
Right.
Right. Well, and the storage is soldered onto the board now, as well as the RAM on a lot of the Apple equipment.
Right.
Now, but that being said, on a modern MacBook Air, the entire logic board might be the size of a Snickers bar, but and the rest of it's battery and screen and keyboard, but the circuits inside are just so incredibly small that a human repairable is possible, but ill-advised for the vast majority of folks.
Yeah.
But yes, having the right tools means that you can at least get some insight into what might be going on.
Right, and it is now a throwaway society. You know, when your computer gets too old and a piece breaks, you throw it out. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is we have Joe from Webster, New York on the line. We'll get to Joe when we come back. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here in the truly great and truly grateful to you because we are solely member supported. Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
All right, you win. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm David, right?
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we've got the StreamYard up and running, thanks to Steve, who actually set it up last week because I'm kind of hopeless with this stuff. But it's showtime, and here we are.
All right, my mic is muted, but I don't know if other people can hear me.
Your
elsewhere.
Mic is muted. Allow me to. You shouldn't be. It shouldn't matter. My mic should be muted too, actually, because theoretically we're coming
pulling from the board.
Yeah theoretically.
Okay. Then I will stay muted in StreamYard, and if it just sounds like I'm moving my lips but nothing's coming out, then
turn up the radio.
Then call in and tell me.
Yeah, if people can't hear us, let us know.
Yes. Yes. If your phone isn't working, be sure to call us.
Yeah, right. if you can't hear us, let us know. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Webster, New York. What's up, Joe? Joe, you there?
Nope, he hung up.
It's the No Joe Show.
The No Joe Show.
Joe was a no show.
Sorry, Joe.
Call back, Joe.
He seems to have hung up, but anybody can call us back. We're at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And while you're calling in, I'll read more news. Security analysts have found a severe security vulnerability in the desktop app for Microsoft Teams that gives threat actors access to authentication tokens and accounts with multi-factor authentication turned on. Microsoft Teams is a communication platform included in the 365 product family, used by more than 270 million people for exchanging text messages, video conferencing, and storing files. The newly discovered security issue has an impact on versions of applications for Windows, Linux, and Mac, and refers to Microsoft Teams storing user authentication tokens in clear text without protecting access to them. An attacker with local access on a system where Microsoft Teams is installed. And remember, you can gain local access via viruses and maliciously crafted things. So local access doesn't necessarily mean you got to be sitting at the machine. So they could steal tokens and use them to log in to the victim's account. This attack does not require special permissions or advanced malware to get away with major internal damage. By taking control of critical seats like a company's head of engineering, a CEO, a CFO, attackers can convince users to perform tasks damaging to the organization. You get a message from the CEO that says, log in to this address.
Yeah.
You're going to go log into that address.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're on Microsoft Teams, which is secure. So if a message says it comes from the CEO, it came from the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
Vectra researchers discovered the problem in August of 2022 and reported it to Microsoft. However, Microsoft did not agree on the severity of the issue and said that it doesn't meet the criteria for patching.
Microsoft, you know, we looked it over and... Yeah, we're just going to stay with what we got here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Microsoft Teams is an Electron app, meaning that it runs in a browser window complete with all the elements required by a regular web page.
Right.
Cookies, session strings, logs, all of that stuff. And Microsoft has a lot of Electron apps.
Yeah.
And now we're wondering if all of them have this issue. Electron does not support encryption. So the answer to my question is yes, they do have this issue.
Well, maybe not natively. Can you add it on?
It doesn't support encryption or protective file locations by default. So while the software framework is versatile and easy to use, it is not considered secure enough for developing mission critical products like, let's say Teams.
Business communication products.
Right. Unless an extensive customization and additional work is applied, none of which, of course, were done here. A Microsoft spokesrobot said, "The technique described does not meet our bar for immediate servicing, as it requires an attacker to first gain access to a target network." We appreciate Vector Products' partnership in identifying and responsibly disclosing this issue, and will consider addressing it in a future product release. So does your company use Teams? Careful. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. This is why we rail against Microsoft.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
They've got 100 million programmers. They can afford 100 million more without even, you know,
flinching an eye.
They could use the interest on the interest to pay those programmers. And yet they leave a product like Teams wide open without the additional work needed to secure it.
Hey, what? It could be worse. It could be Outlook.
Who says it isn't?
Yeah, really.
Outlook is an Electron app.
It could be a big problem. But what I was reading between the lines there is that it sounds like it's almost a implementation issue, where if you are implementing Teams for your company and you didn't go through all the steps to set up security, then perhaps that's the issue. Like, well, it's yeah, there, but it's not baked in.
Right. Basically, no. Yes. And what they're saying is it's not our problem. We've put out an insecure product, but it's not our problem. It's your problem. If you don't secure your network properly, then this is your problem.
And I imagine that would be their point of view, yes.
That's my point. I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying that's their point
of
view.
That's their point of view. Uh-huh. And, well, that's a very easy point of view to take.
Point the finger elsewhere.
Yes, it is. But, you know, it's the least amount of work for the most bang for your buck.
Right. It would be nice if
every company on the planet can spend all their time hardening Teams, or Microsoft could harden it once and be done for everybody.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And as long as the way they attempt to do it is compatible with all of their customers, then they'll be fine. But the moment, you know, the third customer has a different set of needs, or the way they chose to solve the security problem isn't compatible with their environment, then they run into trouble. But yeah, you're right. The product itself may be not set up for security, and it may require some additional configuration and customization when you go to implement it. Now, that being said, I hope that your company's security team has the resources it needs, and that the vendor, Microsoft in this case, has supplied all the documentation about how to go about this. But yeah, there are a lot of people that just sort of grab the stuff and run with it. And, you know, yeah, security, we'll get to that later. And then later never shows up on the calendar.
Well, when you install something like Teams from a company like Microsoft, don't you assume that it needs at least some minimal level of security?
Oh, Nick, haven't you read the EULA? they assume no level of merchantability for this software.
Exactly right.
And that's the word they use.
That's exactly
right.
It's
like, here's a thing we made, and thank you for your money. We don't guarantee that it can do anything at all, and we don't necessarily guarantee that you should use it for, air traffic control or life support systems or to run nuclear power plants.
Or to actually work. I told you this many, 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 many decades ago. I read the Terms of Service, the EULA, on the back of the Western Union telegraph form. And it basically boils down to, we may or may not make up to one attempt to deliver this message.
User datagram protocol, literally.
Now, of course, in practice, billions of messages were sent quite successfully every day.
Yeah.
But legally they could just take them, roll them up, throw them in the garbage.
And deposit your money. Yes. The soda machine ate your dollar.
Exactly right. Oh, well, get over it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Judy from Webster, New York. What's up, Judy?
Well, I have a couple of things. I'm not sure if you've already covered this, but about 10 days ago, I could not get into anything that was Microsoft Edge.
Okay.
And I couldn't change the browser. So I had to wind up taking it in, and they said they had to fix something in their registry and that it was an update that Microsoft had sent out and had eliminated Edge. So do you know anything about that?
Eliminating Edge, that sounds unlikely because Microsoft Edge is Microsoft's latest browser. The version before that was called Internet Explorer, and that one was
deprecated.
It's no longer a product that Microsoft supports any longer, but Edge was supposed to be its replacement.
Yeah, no, Edge still works as of, well, yesterday. So if there was an issue in the registry that prevented Edge from working and prevented you from changing to another browser, it sounds like that got fixed. So that's good. But it sounds like a fluke to me rather than an endemic problem, because I haven't heard this from anybody else.
Well, when I brought it in, he said he had two or three other people with the same issue.
Okay.
Interesting. Well,
thank you for letting us know about that. We'll definitely put that on our radar here.
But everything's working now, though.
Yeah, because they fixed it, and of course it cost me $50 to do that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you were able to get it fixed.
My second thing is I have an old CPU that I want to discard, and I want to know how to erase everything.
Okay.
What operating system is it running?
I think 10, might be 7, but one of those.
Do you want to completely erase the entire hard drive completely?
Yes, because I want to junk it.
Well, okay, then one of the things you can do is there's a program.
Well, I was going to say, before she goes junking it, how old of a machine is it?
More than 15 years.
Because I was going to say, for you, I was first trying to look out for you.
I appreciate it, but no, what you can do is one of two things. You can remove the hard drive and just smash it with a hammer.
That works really well.
That works really well.
It's good for frustrations, too.
Right. But if you want to actually erase the drive itself, then there's a program called DBAN, Derek's Boot and Nuke. And it's a CD or a thumb drive that you stick in, and you boot with that, and then run the programs, and it'll erase it all the way from a quick erase to a military acceptable erase,
right?
Which takes many days,
right? Yeah, at a minimum, you're looking at probably 3 to 5 hours.
Yeah. So the program is available for free,
but you don't have to be in front of the computer while it does this. You plug it in, you start it up,
and you walk away.
You walk away, and later on, it tells you it's done.
Right.
Alternatively, at least in New York State, it is illegal to put e-waste in the trash, but there are many places here, and I'm not sure where you're calling, it was Webster, I guess, and there are e-waste recyclers that will go through this process for you, or will take the hard drive out and literally shred it into metal confetti, so that there's no chance of anybody pulling any information out of it. It may be worth contacting your local electronics recycling center and ask what choices they offer.
I think that I would rather do it myself. So what's the name of the program?
It's called Derek's Boot and Nuke, and I will put a link in our website, but it's at dban.org. DBAN, Derek's Boot and Nuke.
That's a very effective tool.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, my third thing is I keep getting this email from Yahoo telling me that they're eliminating classic mail and I need to upgrade, blah, blah. And when I click on it, it takes me to some weird website asking me to log in, and then it has, of course, prices of things. So is this happening?
It is quite likely. Look, what address is it coming from?
It's coming from a Yahoo address.
Hmm. But is it like? Okay,
no,
the
I
thing
don't know.
To do. If do you have any Yahoo address?
I do.
All right, then what you want to do is log in to Yahoo itself, and see if there's a message there about it.
So you don't know anything about it.
Well, I'm logging on to Yoohoo.
Yoohoo.
Yoohoo. Chocolate drink. Yoohoo.
Delicious.
I'm logging into Yahoo myself right now.
Let's see what we can learn.
Merciful heaven, it's been a long time.
Remember Yahoo? Remember the 90s?
Now I have to think of what...
Remember America Online?
Oh, yeah.
I just use it for junk mail. Everything else goes to Gmail.
Yeah, I do the same, and I remember CompuServe, so...
Yeah!
With your, what, 6-bit... 6-bit usernames.
I don't remember that one.
Oh, yeah. That's going back to the old monochrome screens.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I called a couple other people that I know that are on Yahoo and asked if they were getting that same message.
Okay.
And they said no.
Yeah, see, it should be in your Yahoo email account. If you go right, like Nick said, go right to Yahoo. Where your mail is, it should be sitting there, not some email that was sent out. That could be spam.
Yeah.
And they're going to direct you to some other site that if you look up in the corner, if it doesn't have that little lock, you don't know where you're going.
Yeah, my gut says that this is probably somebody who's trying to scam you.
Okay. Well, that's what I thought, and I haven't really... Like, I've clicked on it, and then I haven't gone any further because I was unsure of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm not seeing anything about that on here.
But keep listening, and if other listeners have experienced this too, we'll make sure to put them on the air and let them educate all of us.
Well, I thank you very much. I try to listen to you every week. I am a member and appreciate all you guys do.
Oh, thank you for being a member and definitely thank you for
thank
listening.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
You
bye,
too.
Judy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I just logged into my Yahoo Mail. The only mail I have is from 2020.
I'm surprised it's that recent.
Me too. It's my Yahooversary.
Okay. They weren't calling. They weren't telling you about your GeoCities account, or letting you know you need to change your AOL password. Or?
That's right. I think I can safely log off of this now. Thank you very much.
They weren't letting you know that there's this new place where you can buy Beanie Babies called eBay.
Right. All right. So I have posted a link to DBAN.
And yeah, DBAN's a heck of a tool.
It really is. It's an amazing piece of software.
It's like a very sharp kitchen knife. It does exactly what it's supposed to do, but it really only does one thing well.
But it does it really, really
and that's destroying
really well.
Stuff.
Right. And it's free. It's a great program. Kudos to Derek. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Walworth, New York. What's up, Brian?
This may or may not be in your guys' wheelhouse, but I'm hoping it is.
We'll
I may have done something very stupid yesterday. I listed on Craigslist a dorm refrigerator that I want to sell.
Okay.
And I got a bazillion calls. And I figured, but what they want to do is a Google voice verification code. And since I figured it's going to be a bunch of college students that would want to buy this thing, I figured they wanted to make sure I wasn't a scam. But I had a sneaky feeling I just got scammed.
Google voice verification code.
Yeah, do you guys know anything about those things?
Let me look that up.
A Google voice verification code is usually the thing you give them
right.
in order to get a Google voice number.
Well, what I understand is that may have now put my own phone number out on the internet for anybody to use.
Now, but what more than likely happened is that somebody took out a Google voice account and used your phone number to do it.
Right, exactly.
All right, so I have good news and bad news. The good news is I found information about this on the internet that I can read to you. The bad news is that it comes from the Federal Trade Commission.
Yeah.
Under their consumer advice, the article is labeled "The Google Voice Scam, How This Verification Code Scam Works and How to Avoid It." And this is from October of 2021, so not quite a year old. October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, so the tricks scammers use to steal our personal information are on our minds. If there's one constant among scammers, is that they're always coming up with new schemes. Here's how this scam works. Scammers target people who post things for sale on sites like Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. And they also prey upon people who are looking for help finding their lost pet. They contact you. They say they want to buy the item you're selling. But before they commit to buying your item or returning your pet, they hesitate. And they say they've heard about fake online listings. They want to verify you're a real person. And they send you a text message with a code and ask you for the code. And if you give them the code, they'll try to use it to create a Google Voice number linked to your phone number.
Exactly.
Let's see. So the scammer might use that number to rip off other people and to conceal their identity. Sometimes the scammers are after a Google Voice verification code and other info. So if they have a link here that says here's what to do if you steps from Google to reclaim your number if somebody has...
I tried that and it didn't work.
Okay. Well, I can definitely give you the links here. But in general, it looks like somebody was trying to set up a Google Voice, attach it to your phone number, and let me see what Google says we can do about it.
Yeah, we're looking up what to do about it, and
so it's
interesting.
Yeah, you can go on your own computer to voice.google.com.
Right.
In the upper right, you click on settings. You go to linked numbers. You...
Can you just...
Get your number back after it's removed. Keep your number before it's removed. You don't really care about the Google Voice part. You just want it to be disassociated.
Right.
So under linked numbers, you should be able to grab your own number and disassociate it from that Google Voice.
All right. Well, I will try that all again, but I did it once before, and it didn't work. So
Should be able to unlink the number. You should also be able to unlink whatever device it's connected to. So you also get a list of the devices that that Google device... Google number is working on.
Right,
so,
like the bad guy's computer.
Right, so if you recognize or don't recognize one of those devices, then the problem, of course, is that... So, for example, I have one here that says Android device, and it's my phone number. Okay, if I saw Android device with someone else's phone number, I'd unlink that one.
Right.
Right, got it.
And the same with... the linked numbers. So if you unlink your number, you just get rid of your thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
you can just that trims them out of the equation, the bad guys.
Right, and you go farther down, and you can turn off devices as well, so that the Google Voice thing will work on your machine, but not on anybody else's.
Yeah, but I don't want it at all. I just want it gone.
Then turn it all off.
Yep.
And down at the bottom, I think you can... or turn on Do Not Disturb, and then nobody gets a message. But those are some of the things you can try, and they all come out of voice.google.com, and then you hit the settings thing.
Little gear in the corner.
Okie doke.
Try it again. I'm not sure why it didn't work the first time. That's why I decided to check with you guys.
Yeah, I get it. But this is what you have to do, I'm afraid.
All right. And I'm sort of hoping, too, that our listeners will hear this. And if they get some, if they try something like this, they'll be forewarned.
Right. And very much appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. I'm a member, and I appreciate you guys, what you guys do.
Thank you so much. We love the fact that you're a member. All right. We're gonna take a slightly longer break. The first hour of this show is done. But do not stray too far, because there's an entire another hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right. Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported with your generous help. Jazz 90.1, see you in just a couple of minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we are finally up live on StreamYard. That was my fault. The go live button, I thought I had pressed it, but it was behind my clock, and I could not see it. So now I can, and we are indeed live, and I apologize for those of you who did not hear anything for the first hour.
That's all right. We're here now. That's the important part.
We're here now, and that's the important part. So, we should be able to, everybody should be able to hear us now.
So I was at work this week and I got a very interesting request. A person who works there was having, some special needs that they need to have met. And they suggested that I look into providing them with an e-ink monitor. And this was something that I had never heard of before. And you know, when you've been doing IT for a while, it's not most of the requests you get are very common. They're like, help me with my password, help me with my email, help me with my PDFs, et cetera, et cetera. Help me. The biggest one, help me print, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I've made more house
where
payments.
The number one is where are my files?
Where are my files? Yes. Then I always joke with my wife. I say, do you know how many mortgage payments we've made from the phrase I can't print?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so we listened to them, and what they were looking for was a monitor that would not offer high contrast with no backlight and no flicker. And they said an e-ink display would be the right thing. Now, I had only heard about e-ink displays with things like the Kindle or other e-readers that people use for reading books or journals or things like that. I didn't know that such a thing was possible. One of the downsides to e-readers in general has been that their ability to refresh the screen is not tremendously fast. Most monitors these days, at a minimum, are refreshing the screen 60 times a second, sometimes much, much more than that. And an e-ink display just generally in the past hasn't been able to keep up with that. Now, a Kindle is really optimized for saving battery life, and that's another area where e-ink is great. But this was for a desktop computer. It was going to be connected to a laptop. So saving battery or using sipping power was not the biggest concern. So I found out that there is a company in Asia that makes a 13-inch display that will happily live next to your laptop. And you can use it instead of your main display. And it is not super inexpensive, but it has the ability to be super high contrast. And I'm looking forward to learning about how fast they've got the refresh rates up. But probably fast enough to do the type of reading that this person was interested in doing.
Yeah.
Now, they also make a 25-inch display. So not one that's as portable, but one that comes with a stand and lives on your desk and so forth and so on. And they also have a touch screen for that smaller size as well. So that's something new to me in the past couple of weeks that I didn't even know existed. So I just wanted to let you and our listeners know that if you've got issues with eyesight where reading things on a panel, even if you adjust the font size, is still kind of difficult, or if your doctor has talked about increasing the contrast of the things you're reading without increasing the light, I think that was the thing that they were looking for. Then a product like this could really be helpful.
Right. Very nice.
I forget the package we used to use for ABVI. There was too many years. Yeah. But there was a special package that you could put on there, and it actually, you know, because then they'd get the big screens, and then they could enlarge it
right
to whatever size was good for them, because, I mean.
Yeah, but in his case, this person's problem is contrast. Which is a different issue.
You could do black on white and white on black.
Right. Yeah. And of course,
but if it's got a backlight,
refresh rate. Yeah. The 60 hertz refresh rate was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The flicker.
Screwing them up. Yeah. All right. To the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Greece, New York. Ed, what's up?
Nothing much. I have three quick questions.
Okay. Shoot.
I want to back up my LastPass password.
Okay.
And back up my Google password.
Okay.
And my other question is, what password manager do you recommend besides LastPass?
I personally use EnPass.
Same here.
ENPASS.
Right. I use 1Password, the number 1, and then the word password.
And both of those are very good. I can speak more to EnPass. It will allow you to save your file, the password file. It encrypts it on your hard drive so nobody else ever sees it in plain text. But once it's encrypted, it can save it in any number of online systems, so you can use exactly the same password on everything. I use it on my Linux box, my tablet, my phone, my Chromebooks, everything. And that's EnPass, ENPASS. 1Pass does something, 1Password.
Yeah, it's all very similar. In the old days, you used to be able to keep your password store. The trick was you'd stick your password store on Dropbox, and then you'd tell each of your endpoints, hey, go look for my password store on Dropbox, and by the way, here's my password to unlock it to get the contents that I need. I think more recently they have gone to offering hosting on their own services and to increase security on that type of thing, but very similar.
Very similar. So either one of those is a good choice.
All right. And what about backing up my passwords for LastPass in Google?
Well, you can take that file, right? That EnPass or LastPass or 1Password creates, and you can copy that anywhere you like.
All right.
And so you can, you know, if it's not already encrypted, you can zip it up with a password, mm-hmm. and then save it on your Google Drive or your Dropbox or iCloud or wherever you want to go.
Offsite storage.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck.
Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thank you so much. Thanks for calling.
That's the thing, you know, the thing about a password manager is you should be using one.
Oh, yeah.
That's first. Second thing is most of them these days do the same sort of thing, which is that you can use them on multiple devices.
Where are you calling from?
And you can put the already encrypted password file somewhere that all of them can get to it. So if you update on one device, it's available on every device, and
right.
you don't have multiple copies of bad passwords floating around. In general, we always urge people to use a password manager.
And don't be fooled into thinking that, oh, I've got to shell out a bunch of money for this. Chances are good, if you are still in the workforce, your employer may already have an agreement with a password manager company that allows the password manager company to be used in your job, but often also extends a personal account to you as an employee as well. So check in with your company and see if they've got an agreement like this, because it may be a way for you to use a password manager and get all of the advanced features, but it's something that your company gets as a spiff for doing business with them.
Right, and EnPass is $2 a month.
Right.
So,
yeah,
you know, it's $24 a year.
That's, right.
It's ridiculously cheap. All right. What did I just do here? Oh, that's interesting.
See, that's the sound of learning, listeners.
Yeah, that's the sound of hitting too many
keys. It's not Eureka. It's, huh,
Well, what happened was I was typing and my thumb dropped down on the trackpad and did some things. But I got it all back again. And our next caller is Jim from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Jim. What's up?
Hey, I've been trying to work on loading OS Flex on a flash drive. And I'm wondering if OS Flex Enterprise is different from just plain OS Flex.
Interesting.
Yes. Right now,
He's searching for the words.
So Chrome OS comes from the Chrome Enterprise people.
Okay.
Section?
Division.
Chrome, but it's all the same Chrome OS.
Okay.
Flex.
So what does Enterprise offer that the other flavor doesn't?
No, it comes from chromeenterprise.google.
Okay.
And it is the umbrella under which Chrome OS Flex comes out.
Okay.
So it's still just Chrome OS Flex. There's only the one. So but you get it from chromeenterprise.google. Google has their own high-level domain name. Of course they do.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, but what's the difference between, is there an enterprise version versus a consumer version?
No, enterprise is simply the place you get it.
I see.
The product is the same all over.
Okay. All right. So there's only a single version.
Right.
Okay. So there's no two different versions to have to learn the differences between.
Right.
Does that help answer your question, Jim?
It does. I was afraid, thinking back in the older days, enterprise usually means you pay the subscription.
Right.
And that doesn't seem to be true here.
No, it is not.
Okay. Thanks very much for your help.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Jim.
Yeah, we had, last week we had a, on Wednesday, I was at the Apple Cider meeting showing them how to put Chrome OS Flex on. Old Chromebook, on old Macs. And
what did they think of that?
They liked it. I mean, look, everybody's got an old computer that really doesn't run anything anymore.
Right.
But it'll run Chrome OS Flex.
Okay.
And it's not difficult to download it, burn it to a USB, stick it in your Mac, and I mean that in the nicest way, and go. So far, there are only a few Macs that are on the accepted list.
Okay.
And so far, all three of the Macs I've put it on are not on that list, and it works perfectly on all of them. Actually, one of them, I couldn't get the mic to work, so I put Linux on it. Mic still didn't work, so I think
The mic never worked to begin with.
The mic never worked to begin with. So I had nothing to do, and I have another... I don't have another one that's like that one. But so yeah, there's any device you have that is Intel based, and believe me, you wouldn't want to put Chrome OS Flex on an M1 or M2 Mac anyway. But if you have an Intel based computer, you should be able to put Chrome OS Flex on it. And what that does is turns that old computer into a Chromebook. So you get all the Chromebook things. Most of the ones I've tried it on don't run Android apps.
Okay.
But they run Chrome itself. They run browser extensions. They run Linux. So all of those things work. So you should be able to get plenty of life out of those old machines. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Hi, good. You got a surplus of Eds today.
Yeah.
Question on a laptop running Windows 10. I have it set to go to sleep after a couple hours of non-use. When I wake it up, it seems to have disconnected from the Internet on its own. Is it supposed to do that?
It can.
Yeah, I was going to say it can. Why even bother doing it? Just turn the monitor off.
It's a laptop.
It's a laptop, yeah.
All right, so that would help save the battery. I can think of reasons why it would. That would be more secure, of course.
You can keep it on if you want to.
Okay.
What you do is you press the Windows plus X key, hold down the Windows key, hold it down like it was a shift and hit X.
Right, and hit X, okay.
Yep, and then select the device manager.
Uh-huh.
You go into the network adapter.
Uh-huh.
Pick your Wi-Fi adapter.
Uh-huh.
Right-click on it.
Yep.
And from the drop-down menu, select Properties.
Okay.
Then you go to the Power Management tab.
Mm-hmm.
And disable it. Don't let the option is allow the computer to turn off this device to save power. Turn that off.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So what it's doing is what you told it to do by not telling it to do anything. when you go into sleep mode, it powers down every device it's allowed to. One of the devices it's allowed to is your Wi-Fi adapter. By doing what I just told you, you're telling it, don't touch my Wi-Fi adapter. Which means it's going to draw a little bit of power even when the machine is sleeping.
Okay.
So if you let it sleep for a week, you may find you run out of battery.
Yeah, no, I only do this for a few hours. Well, for 6 hours or so at the most.
Right. So as long as your system is well charged before you put it into sleep mode, you should be more than okay. I mean, and by using power, it's a trickle. It's a tiny little trickle of power.
Yeah.
But, if you're one of those people who sticks it in a closet and goes on a trip, it's going to be out of battery when you come back.
Yep.
Right. Okay. Okay, great.
There you go.
Thank you very much for your help.
Absolutely. Have fun.
You do. Bye.
Thanks, Ed.
Yeah, there's lots and lots of features that you can turn on and off in power management on every machine. And the way you prefer to use your machine is, of course, your business. But you need to be aware that when you leave things unturned off, powered on, left.
Leave them on.
Leave them on.
Enabled, yeah.
You're going to use battery. And
yep. Everything costs.
Right. It may not be much, but it's going to be some. So, the trickle charge that a Wi-Fi connector takes compared to the size of most laptop batteries, it's going to last for quite a while, but you are using your battery. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. Hi, Fred. What's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, hello. Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks to you guys.
There we go.
Wow.
First of all, a Fred instead of an Ed.
Yeah, I noticed.
Yeah, right.
So one of the things that I would like all listeners to hear is that, WGMC is a member-supported station.
That is true.
And I listened to a little bit of NPR, and I was sitting back going, doggone it, they get a lot of advertising.
Yeah,
that I don't hear on WGMC, so that's a big kudo to everybody. Dig in their pocket and send a donation.
That's what we like to hear. Thank you, Fred.
I am a member, and I am also a sponsor of Ask Nick.
That's what I like to hear.
So,
thank you.
A few things. You've got a Kindle book that you've written. Actually, several that
thank
I looked
you.
At.
Yes, I have.
And I want to view it on my Android device.
Hmm. Okay.
It's not a Kindle. I've read something about going to Amazon and creating an account and et cetera, but I'm just kind of, is that going to work?
That absolutely will work. There is a Kindle app for Android.
Uh-huh.
And if you download that, you can log in with your Amazon ID, which you might have to create one, but you can log in, and then you can go into their store and buy any book you like and read it on any device you have. So if you put it on your phone, If you put the Kindle app on your phone, you can read it there. If you then put the Kindle app on your tablet and log in with the same username and password, your same library is available. You can read it there. Same thing with your laptop, whatever.
Does that go away if I don't have a paid membership to Amazon?
No, you bought the book, and theoretically, yeah. It's yours forever. Because you bought the book.
Okay, great. So I'd like the name of that or information on that high contrast viewer that you spoke of a minute ago.
Yes, let me.
That's Dennis.
Excellent question.
It is an excellent question. You do need to know that e-ink refresh rates are very, very, very slow. I've got a very small one that my daughter gave me for Christmas one year to play around with, and it takes almost a second to refresh. And
well,
this
longer than that to read the page. So if I'm using it to read something like one of the books off of the
right
Kindle app.
Yep. So right. The company is Dasung, which is D as in Delta, A as in Alpha, Sung, S-U-N-G, and their website is at dasungtech.com, D-A-S-U-N-G-T-E-C-H. And they have a page that talks about their two options. They have a 13.3-inch e-ink monitor that they call paper-like. And they have a much larger version as well. They also have a 7.8-inch e-ink tablet PC. It's not an e-reader. It's an actual tablet PC. But check into those. I would say they're not the least expensive things I've ever seen. But if that is a specific need that you have, this could be a device that could help.
Well, I think it might be a little easier to read on the long haul, and it. If it doesn't use a whole lot of power, I'm looking for something that's a larger screen. Like, say, if I'm getting creative and I want to try out a new recipe, I could just put it up on a
right.
On a, yeah, because I'm not going to change pages for a while.
True.
Well, you might if you're looking to buy something anyway. You might look at one of the Kindle e-ink readers.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's probably not much. Probably a lot less expensive than
right.
The monitor, and it lets you read your Kindle books and everything else, and those are available in the Kindle store at Amazon.
Right. Well, yeah. Do the homework. Check out both options and see what looks best for you.
Okay. And to your listeners, I use NPass as you Nick had recommended some time ago. I went with the lifetime plan. I recently looked. I don't remember what I paid, but it's up to $80.
Yeah, and for a lifetime.
Yeah,
it was worth every penny of it.
That's what I did, and it's like you say, to be able to put it on every device, so no matter where my phone, my tablets, my computers. Yeah, it's
well worth it.
Yep.
I use a couple computers at work that are only for my use, but they're not my property,
right?
So I don't put any apps on there, but I can check my bank statements and all that from that using a flash drive, because I have the NPass on the flash drive as well.
Yep.
And it's so simple. There are some caveats or some websites and some apps that it has a little snafu with. You got to just learn to work with it.
Right, right.
My RG&E bill, for some reason, it wants to put my password in the username, but it puts it in both places, actually.
Well, that's interesting.
But that's actually, from what I've been told, an issue with the app itself.
Right.
NPass has got excellent support, and they get back to you like right away for any kind of issues you have.
All right, excellent. Thanks so much.
Got two scam notices. I got a thing called Novita at Nax. I got an email thanking me for my purchase and a copy of my invoice for $300 some dollars, And if there's a problem, call his number. And also a Camp Lejeune scam.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Those I got are that going one. Around.
It's, you know, warning everybody.
All right, look, we got to go. I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Okay, We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. I can be loud if I have to be. Sound bites right here. On the, if I think Rob's not better not be listening. Right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Back in just a couple of minutes, assuming one of us doesn't kill the other one.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dua Lipa. Wait, Dennis Worcester. Yeah, that's it. Sorry, music got me.
Dewey Wilson, Dennis Worcester.
Dua Lipa.
It is Dua Lipa, I know. But I thought Dewey Wilson. It's the first thing I thought of. Dennis Worcester, Dewey Wilson.
Uh-huh.
It's 35 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites, and we have Victor from Irondequoit, New York on the line. What's up, Victor?
Hey, Nick. Years ago, you recommended Bold Beast Recorder, and it was wonderful until I got my new phone. And my new phone, I believe, is Android 12, and it doesn't work at all. Any idea of why, or can you recommend something else?
What was the program I recommended?
Bold Beast Recorder.
Oh yeah, Bold Beast. It doesn't work anymore. Google has their own recorder software, but you want to record a phone call, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I think it's.
Could you ask the person to please turn down the TV in the background, please?
Okay, hold on.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think it's.
Nick is searching.
It's a four. I think it's a pound four. I think.
On your Android phone?
Yeah.
To start the recording?
I
remember something like that from the Google Voice.
Yeah. Hold on a second. I'm looking.
Okay.
I'm looking.
That's right, little partners. He's pulled out his digital device.
That's right.
He's swiping along over there, something fierce.
There's a screen recorder. Interesting. There is a recorder.
Yeah.
But I think... if you just want to record a phone call.
Yeah, both parts.
Yeah, okay. So
both halves.
You can swipe down from the top of the screen and those four little lozenges show up.
Mm-hmm.
If you pull down again, you see more of them.
Mm-hmm.
And at the bottom of that, and the far right, the bottom right corner.
Yeah.
Is a pencil.
Okay.
And when you click on that, you see a bunch of these tiles. I mean, just...
things to choose from.
Pages of them.
Okay.
And you can move them around, and the four at the top show up when you do that pull.
Sure.
Down.
Those are your favorite ones, yeah.
Right. One of which is screen record.
Okay.
And under screen record, you can say like... record audio, record touches on the screen or whatever. And if you go to record audio, one of the choices under that is a menu to activate that, and you would record the microphone, which includes the phone.
So that will record both halves or just his side?
I believe it records both sides, but I believe you can record both audio and video calls.
Oh, okay.
Now what I don't know is if it tells the other person you're doing that.
Right. Well, the laws on that vary in the United States from state to state.
Right.
And
here in New York, it's one party consent.
Right, which means that as long as you know it's being recorded,
it's legal.
It's legal.
But I, you know,
even if you don't tell the other person.
Right. But in other states and certainly in other countries, I know there are many hundreds of people who download our podcast across the world. So I don't know what the laws are there. Perhaps you should check them before you start using
that
this.
That would be recommended. We are not a lawyer, and we are not your lawyer.
That's right. I don't even play one on television anymore. So you can also restore. You can also install a program called Truecaller. T-R-U-E Caller.
Mm-hmm. What does that do?
Same thing. It does the recording for you.
Oh, okay.
Truecaller. Yeah. That sounds familiar.
Hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll you can create a shortcut on your desktop and all the things, you know, that are easy to do. So that's Truecaller, and that does the same sort of thing. But I don't know if that records video calls as well.
I'm just concerned of the audio.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
So either Truecaller or the built-in thing will do it for you.
All right. Thanks, Nick.
Yep. Enjoy.
Yep.
Yeah, I used to use Beast Recorder all the time.
I do remember that when I, with my Google Voice, when I did that #4, yeah, to start the recording, it would announce in the call, yes, recording started, or something to that effect, yeah, so that everybody, both sides, heard that.
Yeah, yeah.
Boston Harbor?
Which is probably the more polite way to do it.
Okay. Right.
But yeah, understanding the consent laws of your state is probably the best way to go there. So it sounds like we might have another caller coming.
Yeah, it's Dan again, back from Sackett Harbor.
Oh boy.
What's up now, different, Dan?
Different problem.
Okay.
I'm not surprised.
I have a friend that has this MacBook Pro. It's a 2019.
Okay.
And it appears to be deader than a doornail. Although he said that if he applied a certain key combination, like Shift, Control, Option, Splat, Left Elbow, yeah, the touchpad would vibrate.
Okay.
All righty.
Well, that's a new one. All right. So the 2019 is right before it's probably the last Intel-based Mac, MacBook Pro. That model charged via USB-C. In fact, I think it might be actually the one that I have here with me. So I think the first thing to figure out is the MacBook Pro getting power from the power adapter? And I know it needs a certain number of watts of power. It's probably like 60 watts or something.
I think it's 80, 85, and yeah, I changed that out.
Okay. The 60 to 80, 85, that depends on the screen size. If it's the 16-inch model, it needs the bigger one. So if you feel comfortable that you've got power coming from the wall and going through the adapter and coming through the cable and getting to the computer, then the next step is to make sure that the computer is receiving the power. And clearly it sounds like the power button isn't working at this point. Now, I know that there is a known power issue with that 16-inch model. Is it a 16? Do you know for sure?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. I think there is a known issue with the 16-inch related to power, and the only good news I have is that you're very close to Route 81 so that you can drive down to Syracuse to the Apple store there. And let them take a closer look. If there's a Apple authorized service provider in your area, they would be the next best place to investigate what's going on.
Is there a possible way to find out if it's been recalled because of that?
You could call Apple's support line, and they can work on that with you. They also, if you go to apple.com/support, they will do chat support with you.
Okay.
And you can give them the serial number off the back.
Right, and they'll be able to tell you if there's an issue. Oftentimes, if there is a recall, then the repair will generally be handled free of charge. But again, that varies from issue to issue. So I think having Apple-authorized folks take a look is probably your next step.
Probably so. Was able to power up. Is there a display port or something on this? I see four USB-Cs.
Yep, that model has four USB-C ports and an audio out jack, if I remember correctly.
Correct.
Yep, and you can put in adapters into any of those USB-C ports to turn them into whatever kind of display or network or USB hub or anything else that you need. But it doesn't have a display connection directly on the board. The generation... two generations after this one, they finally brought HDMI back, but on this one, I think you're out of luck there.
All right, so this is a known problem for a 2019 MacBook Pro.
It's a commonly observed problem, but I've seen a number of YouTube videos about it and people that work on them. But yeah, having a professional tech take a look is the next step.
Sounds good to me. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Yeah, one of the things they talk about is resetting the SMC, although I'm not entirely sure what an SMC is.
It's the system management controller, and it's in charge of
charging
the battery and supplying power.
Right, and I think this is what he was talking about. It says press control plus option plus shift, the one on the right side of the keyboard.
Yeah.
Hold those for 7 seconds, then add the power button.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're pressing all four of those things for another 7 seconds. Then release all the keys, wait a couple of beats, turn your Mac on.
Straighten your hand out.
It's worth a shot.
Right.
It doesn't cost anything to try that.
Right.
But I have heard about power issues related to that unit on the logic board.
Right. All right.
And I'll shoot you a link of where I learned about those.
Thank you. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Jerry from Webster, New York. What's up, Jerry?
Hi, guys. I have a question. A while back, I sent an email with a photo attachment on something I wanted to sell, and I got kicked back with a message that it could not be sent because its size exceeded the server's limit. And it says you can use the option located in Tools, Accounts, and Properties. And I'm trying to find out where I find the tools and accounts and the properties. I can't believe I can't find it.
Well, I believe that was talking about a specific mail manager, and if you're not using that particular mail program, you don't have those options.
Well, this is with Roadrunner Windows Live Mail, and I thought I had that option with them, but maybe I don't. How would I, if I want, it keeps getting on my screen popping up all the time. I try to close it, and it doesn't want to close. Is there a better way to try and get rid of this?
Good question.
What error message do you get?
It says some errors occurred while processing the requested task. And please review the errors below. And it says this message could not be sent because its size exceeded.
Oh, yeah. So what that means is it's waiting in your outbox to go. And you can't shut down your machine until you resolve that in some way, like throwing it out or sending it. So what you normally should be able to do in Windows Mail is... You want to reduce the size of the... Now, see, that's Outlook. Although I think they're the same thing now.
But it does give me the option. It says you can use the option located in Tools, Accounts, Properties, and Advanced to break messages into smaller parts.
Hmm. That smells like a very old error message. In ye olden days, you could... take a file and segment it and then send the segments to people and then they could reassemble it. But these days it's more common to open the photo in an editor program and then shrink the file dimensions or shrink the resolution of the file or save it in a different format. If you have that photo in a bitmap format, you might want to save it in a different one like JPEG.
Okay.
Which is JPEG has the ability to save a lot of the detail, but use much less disk space to represent it. And that also means that it uses much less network time to transmit and send that. And I think that's what the server is complaining about, is that the file size is much larger than it was ready to work with.
Right. So, I put it in a different file, possibly, and maybe it will break it down a little bit.
Yeah, right. It probably will shrink it down, sort of like a sponge. It'll squeeze it a little.
And a lot of programs, graphics programs will allow you to resize the picture, which makes it smaller, which makes it less. The other thing is, you're right, there's no tools menu anymore, but there should be a tool ribbon. And if you're not seeing that, you might go up to the view menu and see if under that, you have a tool menu there. The other thing is, in the new Windows Live Mail, there are a lot of things hidden under options, which is under the file menu.
Oh, okay.
So it has a bunch of, there's a bunch of safety options and a bunch of mail options, and it may be in there.
I see. If I want to delete this, since it's an older email, it keeps popping up and I'm trying to delete it, and I'm just wondering if there's a better way, a quicker way to do that.
Well, if you go to your Outbox, you'll find it there, and you can just right-click on it and select Delete.
Okay, I'll try that. Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yep, thanks. Yeah, there's it's one of the things that just makes me crazy, and it's not just Microsoft that does this, but again, Microsoft can afford to fix these things. They update a program and don't update the error messages.
Right.
So they don't have a toolbar anymore. They don't have a tool menu anymore. But the error message, very helpful back in the day, tells you go here, here, and here. And it starts at a thing that doesn't exist anymore. Well, it's no longer helpful.
Yes.
It's just simply no longer helpful.
Yes. And of course, yes, you may pay your bill using your Diners Club card or your Bank AmeriCard.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Or you get an error message for an entirely different computer.
Uh-huh.
Microsoft is also notorious for that. I often get error messages from Microsoft that tell me how to fix something, assuming I'm on Windows, which is not a bad assumption when you're talking about a Microsoft product.
Right. Yeah.
I get that.
It's helpful.
But, it doesn't help me because I'm not on Microsoft, which is fine because I know where to go to fix things. But that's a separate issue. And there's a whole lot of that sort of thing that goes on. Every operating system does that. And that's a thing you really have to worry about when you're looking answers up on the web. The first thing to look for is the date that page or that answer was created. Because I've done this more than once. You'd think I would take my own advice. I go find something and I read the whole thing, and then I think, when was this written?
Yeah.
Oh, 2015.
Yeah.
Well, that's not going to be much useful to me now.
That's what gets me, though, is, when you're looking up things, not a lot of them. I love it when they have the date right there, when the article was built.
Great.
There's so many that don't. And it's like you say, you get into it and they're talking about, 3 or 4 years ago, and it's like, wait a minute, I'm 6 versions ahead of this.
Right. I suspect that's a Google Juice kind of thing. So Google will rank your page, your web page, based on many different factors. Now, ideally, what they're looking for is for things to be very well organized, for them to be easy to find, for your photos and your screenshots to have good descriptions and alternate descriptions for screen readers and other things. They're really trying to help people come along and organize their information as well as they can. One of the things that they also use is how fresh is the information. And when you have a date on it that's from 4 years ago, suddenly your page becomes less valuable in their eyes.
Well, the problem becomes when they have a comment section.
Right.
And somebody gets in there and just posts, man, this hasn't been updated in 6 years.
Right.
Well, you just updated it, you idiot.
The refresh date. So here's what I do, and all of our listeners can do this too. Head over to Google, do a search, get some results. When you get the results, right underneath where you typed in, there'll be a number of tabs, one that says all, one that says videos, then shopping, images, news, more. And then way off to the right, there'll be one labeled tools. And when you click on the tools menu, a couple of other menus will appear, one that says anytime and one that says all results. And you can go to the anytime one. And if I know that I'm looking for a recent answer to something, where if I'm looking for something Apple related or elsewhere, I need to know not somebody who wrote things 4 years ago, but somebody who wrote things in the past year.
Yeah.
Would be plenty. And when you click on the anytime, you can pick from anytime, past hour, past 24 hours, past week, past month, or past year. You could even make a custom range, like only show me the answers from April of 2018.
Right.
Okay. So anything that Google saw in that month, it'll show you. But I often use the past year command to narrow down the tens of thousands.
That makes
results.
It at least relative. I mean,
and that, get and you that's in the ballpark. That's a better solution than just putting a date in the search.
Yeah.
So you can say, you know, search for this 2022.
All right. Like Raspberry Pi. Let's say you search Raspberry Pi, but I don't need to know about the Raspberry Pi version 2.
Right.
I want to know about what's going on recently.
Right.
Yeah, with the 4s.
Well, maybe.
Right.
But
or is there a 5? Or, you know, what's
could be
what's the latest? What's the latest? And so you can also one of the choices is news. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't help you when you're looking for the kind of solution you're looking for.
Right.
When you're talking about the sort of thing Dave is talking about, you can type in Raspberry Pi, hit enter, and then select the news tab.
Mm-hmm.
And then you only get
whatever
it starts at the newest and then goes down. So if there hasn't been any news in 2 years, you'll start seeing some very old things, but at least they're there. But the thing is, like I said, many people nowadays search for like Raspberry Pi 2022. Well, good, but Dennis's solution, while it takes a little longer, is more accurate.
Yeah.
You get
more reliable.
Right. If there's something, so if you did the past year, you also get, you know, December and November of 2021, which can be equally relevant.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
And because it happened in the past year.
Right.
It still will fall in there.
Can you do a date range also? Say
you can.
Say to just do the past 6 months.
Sure. Yep.
I'll have to check that out.
And because that's built into Google. Everybody everywhere can use it.
That's one thing I did hear. This one group that I get on the air with on Sundays, they were saying that, one guy who actually knows the guy that does the Raspberry Pi, they're still actively working on number 5.
Yeah, they've been working on it for a while. The problem is chips.
Yeah, he had that same consensus. You know, he goes, we've been able to make some good strides, not as fast as people would like, but he goes, the one thing we won't do is rush something and then, you know, have it, you know, not work.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to burn your reputation.
Yeah, and he says, we won't release anything. He says, I don't care how long it takes me. It'll be ready when it's ready.
Yep.
And
so
I'm not
going to
have somebody, dictating, it's been this long. It's like, it is what it is.
That's right.
The 4s are still in big demand.
And the 400s.
Yeah, and the 400s both are, doing great.
Yeah, and they're beginning to get a little looser in terms of what
slowly,
you can bring.
But surely.
What you can get.
Do you think that they'll loosen up for holidays?
I certainly hope so. We're starting to see them loosen up now, and we're hoping that they'll get even looser. All right, that's it. Shockingly, we have reached the end of another show. That's right. And I want to thank each and every one of you who called in. And Dave Enright, I want to thank him. I especially want to thank Dennis Worster, who, again, Steve, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest. Dennis has taken time out from his very busy life to generously give us 2 hours of his time and attention and wisdom. And sex appeal. You got to say it.
I thought it was understood.
You don't have to say it. It's tacit agreement all the way around. All right. And I'm Nick Francesco, and you've been listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in just 166 hours.